Friday afternoon, and that means it's time for Express Yourself. Thanks for tuning in to KDNK, Carbondale Community Access Radio, Glenwood Springs, Carbondale, the Roaring Fork Valley, and beyond. It's 4:01. You're hearing music from Basalt Library's Bach Bash, which streamed on Grassroots TV yesterday evening. This is Roaring Fork Valley musician Sarah Graff, and she is playing on the cello. Also on the show today, we'll hear from several different artists showing locally. Stacey Dickerson of Carbondale Arts spoke with Marsha Weiss, who has a show opening today at the Art Base. Brian Colley talks to Heather Hillard, who is a ceramic artist based in Boulder and whose art is in Nested Roots, a show at Carbondale Arts, which is running through March 25th. And KDNK's very own Cody Lee will also join us to play some new tracks released this week. And before we hear those voices in today's program, we'll also hear from Carbondalian Georgia Ackerman, who won KDNK's logo competition for our spring membership drive. You'll hear she and I, we had a conversation about that the other day, and you can check out her winning logo design. It's on the top of our webpage at kdnk.org.
Georgia Ackerman, and I was born and raised in Carbondale.
So, Georgia, you submitted a logo for our membership drive with a theme, Your Radio, Your Voice, and we decided to go with yours for this membership drive, and we're so happy to have that. So maybe tell me a little bit about what your logo looks like and how you came up with it.
Sure. So when I was listening to the radio, of course, just sewing, and I heard the call out for the logo. And something that I've always loved about KDNK is just the diversity in music that goes on air and also diversity of voices. So when I heard that theme, Your Radio, Your Voice, it kind of put this image in my head of a mouth speaking. And the idea that I had was swirls within the lips kind of represented different voices all melded together, kind of like a mosaic of voices. And so that logo is speaking KDNK Radio, almost kind of amplifying it out of the mouth.
Great. And it's funny, during a year of so many masks, it's like, oh, look, it's an unguarded mouth on KDNK. How exciting.
Yeah.
Someday I'll do that again.
Just spewing words out.
Yeah. And I mean, it sounds like you were doing some sewing, so you're also into crafting. So can you tell me about your other sort of artistic practices that you enjoy?
Yeah, for sure. I've always kind of thought myself as being average at a lot of things, but art is something that I've always really enjoyed. It's almost meditative, sitting down, and I would doodle a lot during classes growing up. In high school, I took every art class that I could, and spent a lot of time in the art room. So it's always just been kind of a hobby. I never made it a profession. I did study art in college and had a minor in art. And I guess the way that I see it is it transfers over into life, just kind of living creatively. And being raised in this community has definitely inspired that as well.
Cool. And I think for a lot of people, their relationship to their hobbies and maybe to particular arts has maybe shifted during the pandemic. Is that something that you can relate to at all?
Yeah. You know, like sewing, I've been sewing masks and selling them at Pepino's.
Cool.
Yeah, and it was kind of a cool opportunity to learn more about the craft of sewing and kind of develop a pattern that I found worked really well, was comfortable, and I was also just very passionate about getting people to wear masks and, you know, having parents with health issues and who I want to be protected. I thought that was the best way to kind of encourage our community to stay safe. I think generally I find myself doing art when I'm kind of sad or, you know, depressed. And it's really interesting, I think, how those sort of emotions can kind of encourage you to do art. And doing art has always helped me process those feelings and emotions. So I guess you could say in the pandemic, definitely felt a lot of inspiration. And of course, a lot of time at home, kind of more on my own and doing more reflecting.
Yeah, that's a sort of silver lining perhaps to a difficult year, and the mask making too. I mean, it's cool to think of the opportunity for like utilitarian and like useful art, you know. It's
totally.
It's both in one, and I think that's pretty cool.
I have also been donating money to Campaign Zero for every mask that I've sold at Pino's, so it was also a great opportunity to do something outside of myself and help amplify a lot of the voices that have been speaking up lately. That was a pretty cool opportunity. And I think I don't know how many people know that have bought my masks. They've been donating money, even though it says on the package, but, you know, people don't read signs.
Well, I actually don't think I'm familiar with Campaign Zero. Can you just tell us a little about that?
Yeah. So basically, Campaign Zero is a nonprofit, and their mission statement is to identify solutions, provide research and data to organizers and policymakers advocating to end police violence nationwide. So mostly like with a lot of people speaking up in the BLM movement recently, I thought that it was a good opportunity to kind of jump on board and do what I can, donate some money to do that. So
that's awesome. Yeah. There's a lot of layers of purpose to that mask making then. Glad to hear it.
For sure. Yeah, I think something that my dad said that I found was really beautiful is racism is the pandemic. And he actually went and marched a couple of times in Denver, and I embroidered on his mask that message. And so I just think it's a really interesting comparison, too.
Well, thanks for chatting with me, Georgia. And we really look forward to seeing your art on our T-shirts coming up in a couple weeks and probably in a month.
Yeah, I'm excited to have people wearing it around town. I mean, every time I see someone wear my mask, it brings a smile to my face. So I'm excited to see my design on a shirt. And yeah.
Awesome.
I love Katie and Kay, and I hope that shows in that logo.
Absolutely.
Thanks a lot to Georgia Ackerman and to Kathleen for that interview. You'll see Georgia's bright, smiling face over there at Pepino's Pizza in downtown Carbondale. And yes, it is a fantastic logo that I would say speaks well to the messy vitality that KDNK brings to the Roaring Fork Valley and beyond. I'm Cody Lee, and I just wanted to feature some songs sprinkled in throughout this Express Yourself. KDNK just received the new album, the full album from Valerie June, just recently, just in the last week. It's called The Moon and Stars, Prescriptions for Dreamers. And Valerie June was born in Tennessee in 1982, and she started recording music in Memphis in the year 2000. This will be her fifth studio album, and let's give you Stardust Scattering. Thanks for listening.
If only how it wants, make us laugh, can no such pain. You wanna touch the sun, got to learn to dance the rain. Consciousness directs the stream. There's a flow to everything. Watch the stardust scattering. Watch the stardust scattering. Thank you.
Gotta love Valerie June. Thanks, Cody, for that. You're tuned in to Express Yourself on KDNK, and now let's travel through time and space and hand the mic to Stacey Dickerson to hear the conversation she had with an artist this week.
Hello there. This is Stacey Dickerson with Express Yourself. I'm talking today with Marsha Weiss, who has an art show opening on Friday, March 19th, and run through April 16th. The name of the show is Above, Below, and I'd like to introduce you to Marsha. Marsha, hello. How are you?
Hi there. Thanks for having me on the radio.
You're welcome. So tell me, Marsha, tell me about the show that's happening Friday at the Art Base in Basalt. Can you tell me a little bit about Above, Below?
Yes, these are a series of monoprints, monotypes, one-of-a-kind pieces that are actually run through a printing press. The show is very important to me for a couple of reasons. It was supposed to open last March, and of course, we all know what happened back then. So it is opening on Friday, and I do have one wall of new work that I was able to do by some miracle between last summer and now. I'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. But the Above Below refers to two realms in particular that we all live in and amongst. The Above, in this instance, relates to what we think we see, which I can also call the patriarchal construct. Below, for me, is very much about the dark feminine, the intuition, the parts and places where things are born. And I like to juxtapose these two realms because we live, we often forget about one. And my idea here is, in terms of the journey that I'm on, is to reunite these two parts of the world, of myself. And the reason they're in diptych form is because that gives you two parts, an above and a below. Sometimes it's a side by side. The process, my iconography is always pulling from nature, from the natural world, because this is where I get most of my inspiration and my reason to get out of bed every morning. I find that nature has figured out the system so beautifully. And there's no, over, you know, millennia, it's been perfecting its system. And there's so much access that we have, if we look more deeply, to aligning our own selves to the lessons of the natural world. And for example, on one wall, there's four walls. For example, the wall in the center is about trees, and the above, of course, is the tree that we see manifest. The below is the root system. And I think everybody's been hearing a lot about the recent research that's happened around discovering that tree roots communicate with each other. Trees in a forest communicate. Trees communicate with different species. And this is all happening on the mycelial network level, using fungus as a transmitter, in a sense, as an energy transmitter. So this is just remarkable.
It's incredible.
So this is very much a part of above, below, of course. And then I'm working with whales and how whales communicate through over 100 miles or so of using sound waves. And they've also recently discovered that some species of whales, the sound, their song, actually is embedded energetically into the ocean floor, into the volcanic rock, into the substrate. And so they can scientists can now pick up information, seismic information from the song of the whale. So here's another example of, you know, phenomenal wisdom, I would call it.
Yeah.
Nature's wisdom.
Yeah.
And during COVID, when the pandemic broke out, as we all remember, I was really looking for something to do. I was quite frightened. Couldn't believe this was happening. I was really having to dive deeply into what I might be able to pull out of the studio. What was I feeling? What could I say? And a wonderful thing happened. I found an image of a photograph I had taken of a dragonfly that had landed in my studio a couple of years back. And I did some research on dragonfly and discovered that it, in many cultures across the world, except our culture, the dragonfly symbolizes transformation, birth, joy, journey. So I thought this was a good place to start. And I was, I'd also discovered a process called suminagashi.
Can you say that again?
Yeah, suminagashi. So sumi for sumi ink,
uh-huh.
Nagashi. And it's an ancient technique of marbling paper. So with this marbling paper technique and the image of the dragonfly, I was able to produce some work around what I call them dragonfly maps. And about the journey from light to dark, dark to light, and my journey out of this pandemic stranglehold. And then finally, I have a grid wall of Mount Fuji studies. I was invited to study in Japan for 5 weeks a few years back. Mokuhanga, which is the Japanese word for woodblock print.
Hmm.
And it is a very difficult, beautiful process, but really difficult to handle in the sense of creating some sort of consistency. And this was something that Mount Fuji was right outside my window, outside my balcony. We were staying in a small town in the Five Lakes region, a couple of hours from Tokyo, and I had this opportunity. I had an affair with Mount Fuji. It was unbelievable. So I studied morning, noon, night, the light, the color, the texture, and I also am showing 15 of these small woodblock prints. Again, above, below, the mountain below, the weather above. I now understand why artists and writers and poets and musicians have been captivated by Mount Fuji for so many centuries. And then I came back to Carbondale, and we have our own Fuji in a sense.
Yes, we do.
Mount Sopris comes pretty close.
Wow, this is going to be a really, really powerful show. I just really am excited myself to see the show and see how you've articulated all these really complex concepts really beautifully. I'm sure the masculine, the divine feminine, the, you know, all of these pieces about the whales and the trees. I love all of that and how that's a lot to really be sharing with everyone, and I can't wait to see it. Tell me a little bit about printmaking. What is it that you love about printmaking or a monotype?
Yes, I've also been working with solar etchings and woodblock prints, but I'm not interested in making a multiple. I mean, there are too many things in the world already. I just love what happens when I work one at a time and one of a kind. There are all sorts of happy accidents that happen. It's very, very hard to control the medium, which I really like. I was trained as a sculptor, and I did a lot of site-specific sculpture for years, and this is where you need to plan, you need to have a budget, you need to have tools, and somehow walking into the studio with the only thing that I'm really working with is light. I'm very interested in this capturing this luminosity, which really speaks to the spirit within the piece, or the spirit that, you know, that what we don't see And so this is very freeing for me because it's pigment on paper. And the luminosity really comes from the paper, from not not filling up all the pores of the paper, so to speak. And it's a reverse process, so I start from light to dark. It's a dance, really. I get in there into the print shop, and I work with a couple of wonderful printers. I have worked for years with Craig O'Brien, who's here in the Valley. I work with Marina Ancona, who has a studio in Brooklyn and one in Santa Fe. And I've done some work with Open Press in Denver, Mark Lunning. And I couldn't do this without these printers. They're just, it's a really wonderful collaboration in that sense. So, love the spontaneity. I love working with this idea of luminosity. And then the iconography is the very simple shapes that people recognize so that all associations, whatever you bring to the piece is important. I don't want to push this piece down your throat. I mean, it's, you know, everyone has different associations with trees and whales and dragonflies and mountains. But the simplicity speaks to me because it becomes very sculptural, sort of totemic. And I do have this sculptural tendency that I think I bring to the work. And I'm also interested in installation. So the environment, the whole gallery needs to be a part of, a piece of a whole. And that's why I title my shows, and they're very specifically choreographed in that sense.
Wonderful. Well, the Art Base is very lucky to have you having this show, and I appreciate all of the concentration and just an adaptation to this last year. And it seems that it's just really profoundly appropriate, actually, to have your show after the pandemic has sort of ripped through our lives. And I'm excited to be able to see that. I see actually on the postcard that there's a moth as well. And
oh, yes, a moth and the moon.
The moth and the moon.
So a moth flew into my studio at some time back and died on my table. Very beautiful, large, not related, but similar to the hummingbird moth, which I think people have seen around here in the Valley. And it was so extraordinary. It was almost as big as a hummingbird. And so I put it aside and I actually photographed it and turned that into an etching. And then, of course, the moon, the moth and the moon, for me, they go together.
Yeah.
They're related.
Yeah.
And within, if you go to the show, you'll see that I've found some haiku poems for each grouping of pieces that relate to the imagery.
Wonderful.
So it's a poetic journey.
Yeah.
It's always a poetic journey for me.
Yeah. Beautiful. Really, really wonderful designs and that I've just looked at some of the images on your website and very excited. Speaking of websites, you, I'm certain, would like to share the information about your website with us. Can you tell us what that is?
Yes, it's marciaweiss.com. And that's an MARCIA. And I just actually updated my website. That was my winter project. So I'm excited about it because the way I organized it, it's almost a retrospective. It shows prints going all the way back to, I hate to say it, but 1986 or so.
Holy moly.
And so for me, I mean, and not, of course, I only, you know, I curated it. So you don't have to spend hours on my website, but It's a wonderful opportunity for me to see how this work has grown and also how cyclical some of this work is.
Mm.
Images come back around, you know, after some time.
Fascinating.
And I can tell you, it's wonderful to, as an artist, as we artists know this, the work is very autobiographical. So whatever was going on in my life at the time, I can really see what came, what ended up on the paper, on the, in terms of the print. So wow, that's sort of interesting, just for, as historically for me.
Really interesting. Well, we're, I really appreciate having this conversation with you, and I hope that everyone has a chance to see your show at the Art Base that opens Friday, March 19th and runs till April 16th at the Art
and
Base.
One more thing. Stacey.
Yes, please.
The Art Base will have the show that you can scroll through and also an interview that will happen on Thursday about me talking about the work further. So I hope everyone can come visit and, you know, maybe to your higher and lower selves.
Well, I look forward to seeing it. I really appreciate having you share a little bit about your art and your process, and being able to share art with the world is a wonderful thing, and I appreciate that.
Thank you, Stacey.
Okay, you take care.
Thanks, Stacey. Hey, it's Cody. I'm back, and I'm going to play another song for y'all. Brand new release from Melissa Carper, who I know nothing about until this album came to KDNK in the last week. It's called Daddy's Country Gold, and apparently her bandmates nicknamed her Daddy for always knowing how to take care of business. Anyway, Melissa moved from Nebraska to Eureka Springs, Arkansas, where she started busking and eventually made her way to Nashville. And this is her third release. She's been in a couple bands called Buffalo Gals and Sad Daddy, and just brought us Daddy's Country Gold. Let's feature Making Memories from Melissa Carper. Thanks for keeping it tuned to KDNK's Express Yourself.
I'm making memories I'd like to remember. I'm meeting new people I'd like to recall. Some of their names, like Larry and Steve. I'm making memories I'd like to keep. I had some fun back in the day. Yeah, I got some stories. Did I tell you the one? Time when we drank and drank till we passed out there on the ground. Boy, that was fun. Tonight I'm making memories I'd like to remember. I'm meeting new people I'd like to recall. Of their names, like Larry and Steve. I'm making memories I'd like to
Again, that's Melissa Carper off her brand new album, Daddy's Country Gold. And you're listening to Express Yourself. We got about 22 more minutes here. And we're going to move into a conversation from a artist who is showing at Nested Roots, which is at Carbondale Arts, and it runs through March 25th. This artist is Heather Hillard, and she spoke with Brian Colley, who is the manager of that gallery there. So let's move it over to them.
This is Brian Colley. I am the gallery manager for Carbondale Arts at the R2 Gallery, and I'm joined here by Heather Hillard, a ceramic artist who is in Boulder currently. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. My name's Heather. I'm a post-bac student in the ceramics department at CU Boulder. And I used to be a scientist. I was a marine biologist until about 4 or 5 years ago. And now I'm a ceramic artist.
Wow. And as part of this Nest show, how did you get to be a part of this show? You've got some incredible ceramic work.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. So the show is about climate change, and I used to study climate change, specifically on coral reefs. So it's been something I've been passionate about for a long time, and now I like to bring it into my artwork. And one of my dear friends, Jorge, told me about the show, and so I was able to participate, which I'm super thankful for.
Yeah. And Jorge's in charge. He's one of the board of directors, I think, of Nest, mm-hmm. But he's also like an astrophysicist. Tell me, have you been a part of the Nest like program at all, or are you just kind of friends with Jorge and he got you involved?
Yeah, so Jorge got me involved. We actually, my husband and I knew him in Florida. And yeah, I'm new to Boulder and to CU Boulder, so this is kind of my introduction to Nest, but I've been spying on Nest for like the last year or so because it's very much in line with what I want to do, which is combining art and science. So I'm very excited to get more involved with them.
Yeah, so maybe you could go into your science background a little bit. Was that something you were studying before you came to Boulder, probably?
Yeah, so I think ever since I was a child, I always wanted to be a scientist. So I went to college for science, for biology, and then I went to grad school also for biology, and specifically marine biology. So I've spent time... I spent a couple years in Hawaii working on a citizen-based science monitoring project on a local coral reef and doing a lot of environmental education. And that's kind of what spurred me to go into grad school and study coral reefs more because I just fell in love with that habitat. So then I spent 3 or 4 years studying the reefs in French Polynesia. And that's where I met my husband. And so he's a marine biologist also. And after that, I moved to Florida and I worked for the state of Florida and I was coordinating coastal conservation projects. So I kind of jumped around and did a little bit of everything, some government work, academic research, some nonprofit, you know, environmental education. Most of it was related to marine or coastal research.
Okay. And then tell me about your transition or evolution into the ceramic world, because that's something totally different.
Yeah. So I had always kept ceramics as a hobby. I was lucky enough that I went to a high school that had a really good ceramics program in Texas. And so I always wanted to do art and sculpture, but science just kind of won out for a while. But throughout college, I took ceramics classes. In Hawaii, I joined, you know, a little local ceramic guild. And I continued to take classes. And then grad school was actually when I completely stopped. And if you've ever gone to grad school, it's just because it's all consuming, basically. And so that spending, you know, 4 or 5 years away from art, though, is what really made me realize how much I wanted to be a big part of my life and how much I valued working with my hands. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I just got to a point where I realized I was super passionate about science, but I wanted to pursue it in a different avenue. And that was through art. So... Yeah, it just eventually transitioned, and it just happened. Yeah. I don't know.
I can see the passion, especially for marine ecology. You have a sea urchin here at the gallery, but also like a pangolin and a polar bear. What other do you mostly do, like sort of animal-based works, or is there another theme?
Yeah, most of it is animal-based or at least biomorphic, so it's mimicking nature or plants or seeds. I do have some work that is more figurative and more based on humans and emotions or even some like social justice issues. So I kind of tend towards either very science-based or if I'm feeling very emotional about something that's happening in the world, then I'll be inspired to make work about that also. So yeah, it fluctuates. I go back and forth.
Yeah, totally. I can, the detail and the amount of work you must have put into the polar bear especially. Well, the pangolin too, it looks very lifelike. You just kind of want to reach out and make sure it's okay. You'll pet it while it's sleeping. Tell me more about the process with the polar bear. There's a polar bear, or maybe you can describe it. I'll just pause there.
Yeah, so I had this vision a couple years ago to make a polar bear head with basically like hay or grass in its mouth. And I finally had the opportunity at Boulder to do it because I knew I wanted to go big. So I needed the space and the resources, so a kiln that would fit it. So I started building this giant polar bear head, which
is almost lifelike, or is it close?
Yeah, so it's actually really close, which is on accident. So I just start building it, and I think I subconsciously wanted it to be life-size, but I didn't take any measurements. So that was kind of lucky that it turned out that way. But I built it solid. So I used, 200 to 300 pounds of clay and sculpted this giant head and then slowly carved it out and very slowly dried it and slowly fired it. And it luckily survived the entire process. So
is that why it took 2 years to create? Or you just thought of it 2 years ago?
Yeah, I thought of it a couple years ago, but in total, it definitely took over a month, probably 2 months or so. I let it dry extremely slowly, which helps reduce cracking and stress. So
it's very lifelike. When you enter the gallery, you'll come in the second room, and then immediately on your left, you'll see it hanging there on the wall. It's an amazing piece.
Yeah, and so I've done some other animal heads, and I usually cut it off sort of right at the base of the neck. But this one, I really wanted it coming out of the wall more. So if you see it, it has a longer neck, and it really invades your space a little bit, which I find to be pretty exciting.
Yeah. I wonder if you could talk to us about maybe your perspective as a scientist with that science background, just on like how the arts have affected, it's interesting to see like the right brain and the left brain kind of exist in the same person. Like I see a lot of people in Carbondale, like we're a very creative bunch, and I have a studio and I'm always in my right brain anyway, but just your take with your background, your history from science, and then how is the art sort of impacting your direction and thoughts about, you said you had passionate ideas about the human side of things, and how are you keeping up with everything that's going on with climate change? I'm sure you are. I was just curious about that.
Yeah, that's a big question. I think in terms of how I think about art and science now that I am an artist, and I still do help my husband with his research sometimes, so I get to play as a scientist. But I actually find both processes extremely similar. And I don't know if that's just a personal part of my personality. Like, I approach both of them very similarly. Mm-hmm. Even with art, I get an idea, I do research, I think about it, and then I create it and sort of look at the results. And usually it's based off of a question or something I'm interested in, which was very similar to how you do academic research or scientific research. So that's been surprising to me. But then I have this other avenue of my art that is more based on humans and emotions, and it's very freeing, I think, because it's less controlled. And that's something I didn't have that. There was no avenue for that for me in science. Eventually that could become a bigger part of my art practice. I don't know, but it's definitely something I find a lot of value in, is just delving into what I'm feeling about what's going on in the world right now. Mm-hmm. In a very emotional and not necessarily scientific way or result-based way. It's shifting and morphing for sure right now. And I've only been doing this for a few years, so I think it's going to continue to change and evolve.
That's amazing. I can totally understand the different ways you're coming at it with the passion. I feel that a lot when I make art. You get kind of overcome with that idea and the direction. And so it's interesting to hear maybe a little bit of the scientific passion, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, just wanting to know and wanting to learn. And
yeah, and I think for me, so I actually had this revelation today when we were driving to Carbondale from Boulder. I've been trying to figure out, you know, I'm like a little obsessed with landscapes. And I finally had this realization that a lot of my work, it combines just totally disparate organisms. So an urchin with what looks like a lawn, or this polar bear with hay. And I think it's because I just feel like humans in our current environment and the way we live and how we've approached the world, we feel, to me, we are just so separate from nature. Mm-hmm. And there's this, I don't know, this disconnect. And that's what keeps coming out in my work by, I think, putting together these really distinct organisms. And that's just something I'm trying to figure out too, is like, I'm very much attracted to our, you know, nature and the environment, but yet I feel so out of place now as a human that lives in buildings and drives cars on concrete. And mm-hmm. Anyways.
Oh, that's such a cool realization. Holy smoly.
Yeah, I had it today. On the way here, I was like, oh, this is inspiring a lot of my work, like subconsciously, I think.
Oh, I can't wait to see where you go with that. That's amazing.
Well, thank you. This has been a real pleasure working with you guys, and I'm really excited about this show.
Yeah. This show is up March 5th through 25th, and we're open weekdays at the launch pad, 9 to 5. So come on down. We can have up to 8 people at a time in the gallery space. Definitely worth taking a look. Thank you so much, Heather.
Yeah, thank you so much. I hope you guys like the pieces. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian, for that interview. Glad to have that show still running. Check it out. It's open till the 25th. And now you're hearing a local musician, Susan Nicholson, playing as part of the Bach Bash that was aired through Basalt Library last night. And all the compositions that were performed were written by Bach during his residency at the court of Leopold between 1717 and 1723. So, you know, happy 300th anniversary to these songs. Thank you. Again, that was Susan Nicholson. And we also heard music last night in the Basalt, through the Basalt Library from Brittany Brown, who was playing on the violin. We heard Sarah Graff's cello playing earlier. And check this one out.
Beautiful, beautiful piece. I think by Brittany Brown. And we're going to go out with one more from Altine Goon. Brought Katie and Kay their third album, Yol, in the last month. And they are a psychedelic Turkish folk and Anatolian rock combo from Amsterdam. Let's go out with Sevda Olma Saidi. Thanks for keeping it tuned to KDNK. Express yourself. Here's Altine Goon.
Sülfünü tarardı. de seviyorum bir tanesi. Güzellerin içinde de sevdiğim bir tanesi. Güzellerin içinde de sevdiğim